It's Palmer.
Hi, everybody. It's the mayor of the airwaves. And now we have the punching bag himself. It's David Hunter. And, of course, the mayor of the airwaves. See, I got three ha's.
Yeah.
So anyway, how are you?
I'm good. And I want to remind you and the audience out there that this is a respectful discussion that we are having on a high intellectual
yes.
plane.
We have been told by our counselors to remain calm.
Calm.
Indifferent towards the world affairs.
Yeah.
Keep peace at all costs.
Right. Well, it's not indifference. I mean, obviously, but it's good. It's a good idea to be able to have a rational discussion of what's going on. There's a lot of stuff that is disturbing that's causing everybody to be.
I know. You know what?
Upset.
There's talk that there's a little red fat man that's coming on a sleigh too.
Yeah.
We got danger. We got aliens up there. You know, gotta watch out.
That's right. No, well, you're right, The fact that the Christmas season is on us, that adds a little more stress but also joy. So, you know, we have to take life as it comes at us.
You can suffer guilt about what's going on.
Yeah.
Who knows? The world's always been in conflict, though.
Right.
Now, Israel's ethnic cleansing. See, even that question we put there, ethnic cleansing of Gaza Strip. Ethnic cleansing. The Palestinians and the Jews are not at war. It's Hamas. As a matter of fact, in 2005, Israel gave Gaza to the Palestinians, but then the Hamas stole it. And you want to say it's an election? I don't believe there ever was a legitimate election. Stole it, and I was told by an Egyptian who lives in Israel that they killed people, Hamas, who didn't agree with them on the Gaza Strip. And the Jews left behind their businesses, their gardens, all this exceptional business. They were literally weeping and crying with their yarmulkes on. You can watch the videos in 2005. And the Palestinians were supposed to be able to prosper.
Which part of illegal don't you understand? The term for the people that were living in Gaza and the people that were living in the West Bank that are Israelis is called illegal settlers. And we're going to talk a bit about
illegal. That's where you and I disagree.
I'm
sorry, God is in the Bible, in the Old Testament.
All right.
Thousands of years ago, 2,000 years ago, Jesus was here. 4,000 years or six, whatever it was, he told Abraham, this land.
Anyway, the concept of a two-state solution depends on the fact that the parts that are now occupied territories will be given to or returned to the Palestinians for their rightful use as a country.
There you
That's
go.
The concept of the
and
two-state
the, and the,
solution.
And the Jews moved out of the Gaza Strip.
All right, now.
And
now,
remember, the Jews and the Palestinians and Britain and everybody offered it to be a 50-50 deal back in 1948.
Okay, next week.
The Palestinians would not accept it.
Next week, I'm going to give you and the audience a very detailed discussion of how you have that wrong. You've got that wrong.
You've been saying it incorrectly.
But it's a very complicated story, and it
very
would take too much of a time. And with all the other stuff going on today, I've already got it prepared.
So you believe that it's not the Jews' territory at all?
It's not a belief.
No, that is your belief.
No, my belief. Just because you believe it doesn't make it truth. Don't put your words into my mouth. You can ask me what I think. Don't say
what you think.
What I think.
Well, that's what you believe. Isn't that the same thing?
No, it doesn't. It's not the same thing to say you believe and then tell me what I believe. That's not correct.
Okay, what do you believe?
What do I think? I'm going to tell all of you what I think next week. On this subject next week.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's the truth.
It means that it is facts that I have confirmed based on reviewing diplomatic history.
Well, I want to look into it,
facts
too.
You can look into it. But
I will.
But anyway, that's for next week. That's diplomatic history.
Okay, do you remember last week's talk about loaded questions? How was it a loaded question? I got to learn this concept.
All right.
Tell me what I just said. That's a loaded question.
You know,
by saying you believe?
You're putting words in my mouth. That's called a loaded question, you know.
Right.
Yeah,
you two. I'm missing what you two are saying because as far as it's just semantics. It's words. Believe, you think, you
okay,
believe.
Okay, let's go to...
Do I think Jesus was real? Do I believe... No, I believe Jesus was
let's,
real.
Let's go to... Well,
do I think that this is the promised land to the Jews? I think it. I also believe it.
Yeah. Let's go to the topic you just raised about ethnic cleansing in the Gaza, because...
But using the word ethnic cleansing right there
is
a negative.
Here's the New York Times.
Oh, yeah, the lefties.
From yesterday.
Yeah, let me see it.
From yesterday.
Yeah, well, they're far left, you know.
No, they're not far left.
Yes, they are.
Okay. Anyway, the New York Times.
I believe they're far left.
Here, the part, let me see this again, because I want to read this.
Forced to flee Gaza and stuck in a bottleneck. The last point of refuge, yeah.
Now, what the New York Times is saying, and this is what a lot of other people are saying, and I'm going to help expand this, and maybe we can even convince people like you to understand, if not agree. At least you can understand
where you're coming from.
Where I'm coming from and where a hell of a lot of other people are coming from, Rhett.
That's
what I'm trying to explain. I am not some...
And there's a hell of a lot of people that don't believe that.
Well, not at all. You're wrong. You're wrong.
You can't say I'm wrong.
I can say you're wrong.
I'm right.
No, you're wrong. The reality is, here's the reality, first of all. As far as the war in Gaza right now, the United Nations held a emergency meeting of the National Security Council of the United Nations last week.
Okay.
They held a vote. There were in favor of a ceasefire because of, a humanitarian ceasefire because of the terrible slaughter that's been going on. If you've been paying any attention,
okay, let me ask you
the
this
terrible
now.
Slaughter. No, so no, don't interrupt me. Let me finish.
I want to ask you this. So they come in and they slaughter the Jews. So you think they killed, let's say they killed 1,200 Jews.
They killed 1,200.
You think they should have killed 1,200 Palestinians?
Yeah, not 12,000.
Well, during World War II, we killed more Germans than anything else. Does that mean German
raising
was right?
Raising your voice is
was
not...
Was German right?
Raising your
were
voice...
Were Germans good
raising
people?
Raising your voice does not accomplish anything.
Were Germans
quietly,
good people?
Rhett,
we killed more Germans.
Rhett, speak very quietly.
We killed more Germans.
You will persuade more people
okay,
by
well, let's
a
stop
quiet
that
voice.
Stuff. Let's get on the focus. You're... Don't get me off of the focus because I got loud.
Yeah.
The focus is we killed more Germans than anybody in World War II. Does that mean they were right? Does that mean they were right? I don't give a damn if the Palestinians came in there and killed one person. That's it. We're going to take him out. Hamas is going to die, and that's it.
No, there's a concept of proportionality in warfare.
What happened with Germany then? Why did we bomb? What's the beautiful city?
Dresden. Yeah. Okay.
Over the top?
Yes, it was over the top. And I've said that before. Yes. I've said that our attack on Dresden and our attack on Tokyo, the firebombing of Tokyo, was a horrible war crime.
But nobody ever said, well, I don't know about war crime, but nobody ever said that Germany was
innocent.
The world was performing genocide on the Germans because of all the Germans that died in World War II.
Well, the people in Dresden, most of those were non-combatants, okay? They said, oh, there were some—
Well, listen, okay, you and I are in agreement on Dresden.
Okay, fine, okay.
Heaven forbid. I mean, I wish we could go back. It was a city of art.
Yes.
Now, that being said, there were factories there making ammunition, but they were, mistakenly, it was 1,200 in a week Hamas killed and abused Jews. Okay.
Yeah. That's okay. We know that. Yeah. The point.
He's saying. I guess I said in a day.
The point is. It was actually. It was several days. It probably wasn't a whole week. They were not there a whole week before the Israelis got around to responding.
But we didn't call the Germans. The Germans were committing genocide on the Germans.
Can we get back to the issue of what I'm describing
you
as?
You know, I was watching last night. The number one show on Netflix right now. On World War II.
I know.
Do you have Netflix?
No, I don't. And I'm interested in World War II, but we have enough on our plate without bringing in World War II all the time. There are some valid points that you're making, which is that, you know, the United States itself does not have clean hands when it comes to engaging in mass killing of civilians. We have done it. We also did it in the carpet bombing of Vietnam. That was another example.
I didn't do it. I had nothing to do with it.
We, the United States, did.
When
you said you had nothing to do with it, I'm sorry, but you're a citizen of the United States.
But I had
and you're a
to
voter.
Do it.
And you're a voter.
Well, I wasn't
and therefore,
then. I was a little kid.
And therefore, you are responsible for the crimes of your country. You are responsible for the crimes of your country. There is
know.
A certain aspect of that. It's not that you're going to be put at the war trials.
I wonder what God would say.
You're not going to be put on the war trials.
What
but,
would God
you know,
say?
But what you're saying about, oh, I'm not responsible because I don't have anything to say in the decisions. That's the same thing the Palestinian people are saying about the Hamas attack. They did not decide to go and attack. These were Hamas. They were not the Palestinians.
Under the dictatorship of these people, these nasty, badass
people.
And therefore,
the people that should be punished are the Hamas themselves, not the civilians.
Wouldn't it be nice if we could separate them?
Well, you can separate them.
It's like when you scramble the egg, you can't.
No, you can't. As I've said, what's going on here with Israel and the way it's conducting this atrocious massacre, it's not a war, it's a massacre. It's a slaughter. And the use of slaughtering civilians, 7,000-8,000 children have been killed. That is
terrible.
Inexcusable. That is
I don't know that
it's
8,000 children.
Yes, it
12,000
is.
7,000 people. So you're saying more children are killed than adults.
It's not 12,000. We're up to 18,000 deaths in
Gaza.
Are you
sure about
that? Yes, 18,000. You can ask Noah.
But Hamas are cowards that hide behind citizens, and that's the truth.
Okay, if you're in a
because they have people interviewed that said Hamas won't let us leave, even though the Jews are calling the Palestinians on their phones, I don't know how they get the phone numbers or whatever, trying to get through to them when they have electricity.
Well, this is also
dropping leaflets.
Some of that, believe it or not, is Israeli propaganda saying that the Hamas are holding these people.
There's nothing, anything can be said.
Now,
you're questioning propaganda.
No.
I mean, even NBC News, they're saying, we have not been able to stand. There we just saw a video of a truck.
Rhett.
Down below, of aerial view of the truck that belongs to Hamas, stealing the food from the people, pushing them down literally, and driving off of the food and driving to their place.
Speaking of the food, let's just go back to that issue when I talk about genocide and ethnic cleansing. If you are starving a population to death, and that's what Israel is doing, they have not allowed food except under extreme pressure from the United States and international community. They have not let any food or water or supplies into Gaza. That is committing a genocide.
Because they feel if you're going to be feeding the soldiers,
it doesn't matter what they feel. If you are starving, if you are starving children, you're committing a war crime. You're starving children.
Well, they committed a war crime too.
Rhett.
So let's just stop the war crime crap. They're both guilty. All sides are guilty.
Well, both sides. In this case, Hamas is guilty and Israeli government is guilty. That doesn't mean that the Palestinian people are guilty. And what you're doing is you're starving the Palestinian people.
Well, yeah, they are guilty. You know what they said? Because they voted in Hamas. You said that.
Okay.
Did they or didn't they?
Even if they did vote in Hamas.
You don't believe they did, do you?
Rhett, don't put words in my mouth.
Do you? I'm asking you.
Do I believe that what I've been told, they had an election.
A legitimate election.
I can't testify about how legitimate it was. Was it fair? Was it open? Do they have election
how
monitors?
How do you feel?
I haven't examined that question. Okay. I can't make an opinion on it because I haven't examined it. It's a good point.
I still don't understand why you get mad when I say, do you believe? Do you feel?
It's putting words in somebody's mouth, okay?
I don't understand the difference.
Okay, anyway, you'll get it eventually. It'll take a while. Let me get back to the UN vote.
Do you believe, do you think?
Let me get back to the UN issue.
Yeah.
The UN held a vote last week. 13 members of the United Nations. Noah can stop that now.
No, okay. No, go ahead. I'm reading. I'm listening to you. It's not believable.
Because that's called multitasking. We need to stay on the show. And I want Rhett to pay attention to what I'm saying. The UN held a vote. 13 members of the UN Security Council voted to stop the war, cease fire. The United Kingdom abstained. They didn't vote for or against. The United States was the only one who raised their hand and said, I object to a ceasefire. The United States, out of the Security Council, only the United States opposed. Therefore, the resolution failed. The Israelis were allowed to keep going with their war without any condemnation by the Security Council, thanks to the United States. The United States is the only one.
Why did we have more power in that?
Well, we had the Security Council has 5 permanent members, and each of those permanent members has what's called a veto power. If they veto,
so one person vetoes?
One of the 5 members, permanent members, China, Russia, England, France, or the United States, any one of them, if they veto, the bill no longer is valid. It's automatically killed.
Do you like the way that's run?
I don't think that's a good way to do things right now. I think that was the way it was in World War II. The Security Council was set up as part of the UN after World War II, when those were the 5 imminent powers in the world.
Russia,
China.
China. I don't know what China had to do with this.
China at that time was Taiwan, believe it or not. Okay. But Taiwan had...
the Japanese were trying to annihilate, genocide upon the Chinese and vice versa, right?
Yeah, they were. And why China was put into the Security Council, Taiwan at that time, is a question mark. They were not a powerful country. But they were an ally of the United States, and they were brought in, and they represented the Asian bloc. So that's probably why they were brought into the Security Council. Anyway, the United States by itself in this last week vetoed, only the United States vetoed, and therefore killed the Security Council decision. And this was a proposal by the Secretary General Guterres, the head of the United Nations, under an emergency what's called Provision 9-9, which was an emergency to call for a Security Council to stop a catastrophe. This was a unique thing. It had only been invoked like once or twice since the creation of the United Nations. So anyway, that went down in flames. But immediately afterwards, the United Nations called for a General Assembly decision to vote on this same subject of a ceasefire. And that was decided yesterday, Tuesday. And that vote came out with 153 countries supporting a ceasefire, immediate, urgent humanitarian ceasefire, 28 countries abstaining, and 10 countries, including the U.S., Israel, Papua New Guinea, Fiji, a couple of ridiculous little specks of countries, Austria, they're not a speck, saying that they were against it. So the vast majority of countries, Rhett, in the world are in favor of a ceasefire.
Well, let me ask you this. Why did America not help close its eyes and leave Israel, the future of Israel, naked in 1948 when they were fighting the war against the Egyptians?
Okay, you're changing the subject.
I'm trying to find out what
I know, but you're changing the subject. I have
here?
A point here.
What is your point?
My point here is you cannot sit there and say that the whole world is anti-Semitic because they didn't vote in favor of Israel's continuing this war.
You can't say they're anti-Semitic?
You can't say the whole world is anti-Semitic. This is the issue that Israel is often using. They're saying, if you don't support me in my aggressive, ferocious attacks on Hamas and the Palestinian people, then you are anti-Israel.
What do you think about the people in the streets of America who are tearing down the posters of the children and the adults that were taken from Israel?
I think that's sad. It's sad. It's sad, and it reflects what I call, one, the fact that many of those people do not support Israel, but two, that they are misguided in the way they're expressing their political ambitions. Their correct political ambition would be to have their congressman try to encourage Biden to call for a ceasefire. We in the United States are responsible for Israel's keeping this war going on. If it wasn't for us, Israel and Netanyahu would probably have to stop this ridiculous war. Okay?
Well, I know people can be wrong, because in the 1960s, I was a member of Students for a Democratic Society. I was a little stupid 14-year-old or whatever, went to the campus of Vassar College and protesting everything.
Yeah.
And we're going to take over. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I jumped right over. I mean, I didn't know anything. Thank God we didn't take it. We didn't know what we were doing. It was insanity. It was just like, you know, children want to rebel. Right now you got gay people, trans people, whatever, going, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, they're pro-Hamas. And we go, the Hamas would kill them in a second.
We talked about that last week. We talked about that last week. Yeah. We had a whole section on that last week. So let's not go back over that. The reality is—
Well, we didn't go back over anything. We couldn't have any conversations.
The reality is that the vast majority of the world, and this is proved by the most recent UN vote, that they are in favor of a ceasefire. They want the killing to stop, the children to be protected.
I would give anything for the children to be protected.
All right. You would too. Okay. So you're in that camp. You're in favor of a ceasefire. Now, believe it or not,
I'm in favor of annihilating Hamas.
Well,
I'm not in favor of not one single.
All right.
I don't even want them killing grandmas and grandpas and moms and dads.
Okay, when I talk to—
I don't know what to do.
Okay, when I talk to people about the ethnic cleansing issue, this is, as I said before, the New York Times yesterday said in its front page, top of the line, first lead article, it said that the collapsing of under the weight of tens of thousands of people leads to the fear of a potential mass displacement into Egypt. That's what it says in the first sentence of this paragraph, of the first article. It says the family is now—
how come Egypt and those other places won't accept these people, by the way?
Okay, see, this is, again, your reflection of—
They think they're better than the Palestinians.
It's a reflection of your wide ignorance of the subject that you were asking that question. I'm not trying to criticize you. I'm just saying that this is an indicator that, you know, when you say, why doesn't Israel want the Palestinians to come in— First of all, the Palestinians don't want to leave, and that's because of something called the first Nakba. The Nakba was the exodus. You know, you've heard of Israel and their exodus from Egypt. Hmm. Well, this is similar, except in this case, these people were forced out of Palestine when Israel set up camp, and they were not allowed—
And then the Israelis were kicked out.
And they were not allowed back in. This is the problem. 2 million of them, of these people that were fleeing, 2 million, 1947, 1948— When Israel was setting up its first camp, becoming a country, all these people were forced off their lands, and—
That's when they were offered 50%.
2 million. Anyway, we'll talk about that next week. Two million.
That's legitimate. They were offered 50-50, and their leaders—
That's not true. That's wrong. You'd have that wrong, and therefore you and the audience will have a chance next week. We'll go into that in detail. It's going to take a long time.
Was that when Yasser Arafat was alive?
Arafat was probably alive back then, but I don't know if he was the decision maker. I don't know if he was the decision maker in 1947. That's going back pretty far. The issue is 2 million were forced out at the first Nakba, more than 2 million, but just to Jordan, there were 2 million that were left, sent there, and they became, quote, refugees, okay? And they attained what in the United Nations is called refugee status. And they have not been allowed to come back into Israel, Palestine, Gaza, the West Bank. They're not allowed. Israel says, no, you can't come back. That's called the right of return. That's something that these people that left in 1947, 48 have demanded. They say, I want to come back to my home country where my people are. And the Israelis are saying, no, you can't do that. You're out of the country. Forget it. You stay in Jordan.
Why did they have the Jews leave the Gaza Strip in 2005? They should have just left it like it was then.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of mixed up people. You know, right. A lot of the information I've been getting is from this lady, very intelligent lady, who's Egyptian. She's from Egypt and lives in Israel. And she said, we have a head. We have this guy who's Egyptian, who's in some sort of a leader, the other Egyptian. And there was this Jewish guy. The Jewish guy was found corrupt. And a couple of years ago, they voted out the Jewish guy.
Okay. Anyway.
Which is pretty amazing.
Okay. Anyway, we're going to go back to the issue of the Nakba. Because what you ask is why don't these people go to Egypt and why doesn't the Egyptians let them in right now? And that's, of course,
because it's a war right now.
No. The reality is that believe it or not, the Israelis, this is right in this first article of the New York Times. It says the Israel might use the war to push Palestinians from Gaza permanently.
I do want to let you know this.
From permanently.
Because you quote the Times, you immediately shut the minds of everybody that's conservative. Because let me tell you something. This used to be, I still buy it. I'm sorry. I apologize, people, because I love us. There's nothing like a Sunday morning in America.
Crossword puzzle. Yeah, I know.
No, I don't do that. Barbara does that. And she does only the Sunday one, which is the most difficult. And she does it with a pen. That's how bright she is.
Okay. She is bright. She's bright.
She's extremely bright in some areas. But I have my own giftings.
You do.
I keep telling myself
that.
You do.
Anyway,
the point is, you quote in the Times, do you not know what they've done to themselves in their blatant hatred, vitriol towards Trump? Because they arrogantly think they're better. You know, it's just like these people right now. Wasn't there something going on? There's something going on with some sexual thing here. And the people pointing the finger, it's like, well, Mr. Billy Bob, what about, you know, 20 years ago when you were having an affair with your secretary?
Yeah.
I mean, the very people who are the greatest sinners are usually the ones that object to anybody else's sin, you know? And there's a haughtiness going down with the liberal people who think they're somehow better, smarter.
Yeah, I think the Times, the Schulzbergers, who is the publisher until 1992, and then his son was Arthur Schulzberger.
So you're going to tell me that they're Jewish?
Yes,
they're Jewish.
Yeah, they're Jewish.
Fine.
So now what you're saying is that you can't believe them because they're Jewish liberals.
No, I don't say that at all. I just say that the Times has a bad, badass reputation. I've watched. Now, look, you know me. I don't know that much, but I know enough to look for it now. and I'll be watching. I watch CBS, and at the end of a lady gives a report. She get back this a couple of years ago, gives this big jab at the end to Trump, blatant. I mean, if you want to, I wish I had the time. I wish somebody send me a check. Hold on, send me a check for $1.5 million right now, and I will go into. I will take these videos. I will hire the young people who are good at this online, like some of the people that work in this town for some of these national guys.
Yeah.
And we will take those videos, and you will see how they skew the stories.
Yeah.
And we no longer have a free press. You know why we don't have a free press? Because they're bought and sold by people like Soros and these other creeps with money. And you know in their arrogance, you know, people make money. Now, you agree with this. Let's just look on a regular. People get money, and somehow suddenly they think that they're smarter. Even the idiots that inherit money and are terribly, morbidly unhappy people think they're better. And they actually, I've seen people, and right now people are raising, some lady was in berating somebody in a restaurant the other night, and the people said, hey, stop talking to her that way just because she's some rich B-I-T-C-H from the beach. Uh-uh. We the people are going to stand up. We're not going to take that crap anymore.
Yeah.
It's ending. You know, the ones with the sweaters that are tied around their neck, you know, the little thing, and the no socks on the shoes. That's history. See, I got socks on now. It's over and out. That generation has died off. There's a few stragglers. Go.
Okay.
You didn't do your job well.
Okay.
You could have taken all that prosperity and you could have fed the world.
Let's go back to this question of ethnic cleansing, because some people are saying that I must be anti-Semitic because I'm suggesting that Israel is aiming at ethnic cleansing of the Gaza.
Hamas wants to commit genocide on them. We know that. As a matter of fact, Iran says they want to totally wipe out the Jews.
Well,
they've been saying that for years.
To be honest,
you do know that. You are honest.
To be honest, the Israeli self-defense force on Fox, the spokesman, he said that the Nazi-like sadistic Hamas wants to murder every Jew on earth.
Yes.
That's what he said.
Yes.
Okay.
I believe that.
All right.
With all my heart.
Yeah. And that's what.
And if you're homosexual, they want to kill you too.
Yeah. Okay. Now,
and any woman that doesn't wear the proper, you know.
Yeah.
I just saw this other lady interviewed. She was pulled over by Hamas. If they were checked to see if they had their, what do they call the stuff they wear? You know, their face coverings.
Burqa or something.
And they were nasty.
Yeah.
And now we've got stories of men coming back from this, being encountering Hamas, who said they were raped.
Okay.
Raping men.
Okay, okay.
Let's say rape women or men.
Yeah, they shouldn't. And none of those things, including genocide, to be honest, of either side, is acceptable. When I hear this word of this extreme inflammatory expressions by the FDA, the IDF spokesman about Nazi-like sadistic blah blah.
They are.
This is what I
call. I agree with that statement.
Rhett, this is what I
call. But you don't say anything bad about the other side that says the same thing.
I say bad things about anybody who commits these crimes.
Let's hear about it.
I explained to you before that a lot of the claims against Hamas being so terrible are made up. They're fake information. The beheadings, for example.
Make you the king. I'm going to make you the king of the world right now. We elected David Hunter emperor.
Yeah.
Okay. What would you do? Okay, you would have a ceasefire.
Right.
What would you do to annihilate, to get rid of the scourge of the Hamas?
Well, I've said before, one of the easy solutions to this from that Israel could do.
Yeah.
But Netanyahu doesn't want to, and I'll explain why he doesn't want to.
But right now, what
he could do and what I would do
is
we've got all these entry points into Israel along the side of Gaza. I would set up airport-type controls on all of those entry points, and as individual slices of Gaza would be removed and evacuated as I sent my Israeli troops in to those areas. That 100,000 or 300,000 would be moved out into Israel, not into Gaza the south of Egypt. That's the problem, you see. That's why I refer to this as ethnic cleansing, because Israel is pushing them from the north to the south. They went from Gaza City, they bombed that, and they said, everybody go to Khan Yunis. Mm. Now they're bombing Khan Yunis, and they're saying, everybody, you need to go down to Rafah. That's down at the very tip of, on the border of Egypt. And the assumption a lot of people have is that the goal is they're not going to be safe there either. They're going to force them into Egypt. That's what they're going to do. And you have millions of people being forced into Egypt. Now, does that sound like a ridiculous idea? Let me explain why it's not so ridiculous from the Israeli viewpoint, from Benjamin Netanyahu's viewpoint. He actually has a Ministry of Intelligence. Okay, and the Ministry of Intelligence.
But they didn't do such a hot job on October 7th.
They didn't, you're right. But anyway, they came out.
That makes it all very suspect. I saw a man interview last night. It took 11 hours.
I know.
He was protecting his family and children. He lived. He actually shot. He said, I might have killed one of them.
He was a general, an Israeli general back.
I don't know if he was. This guy was dressed in regular clothes. Okay. I thought it was a regular working guy.
Oh, well, there was one Israeli general. One Israeli general who got a call from his family at one of the kibbutzes, and he went immediately, dropped everything, and went immediately.
I just didn't see that.
Into that area,
this guy just had on a regular red shirt.
He rescued his family. He rescued his family.
Kind of a big, bulky guy, tall.
Anyway, that's not the point. The point here is that the Israeli intelligence had.
Yeah, what was with that?
Well, we're not talking
Why
about.
Why would it take 11 hours?
Okay, we're not. That's a different issue of Israeli intelligence. What I'm talking about is a report they gave, which is titled "Options for a Policy Regarding Gaza's Civilian Population." They issued that on October.
You know, you and I, just a little side here, you and I do not have any idea how evil the world is. Now, I don't want to be one of those conspiracy theorists.
Yeah.
But my first thought, now I'm pro-Israel. And so I said, well, they did this. But when they didn't respond for 11 hours, I thought, my first thought was, I'm wondering if whoever's in charge, maybe in Israel, allowed weaponry to be purchased by Hamas, maybe even fed it to them so they would do this, get over the border, and then they would have an excuse. But the sacrifice would be those people who were killed in Israel.
Right, yeah. And that's, that of course, would imply that this is all a staged opportunistic provocation by Israel to use as justification for invading Gaza.
Invading Gaza. They're saying the reason that Biden left behind $1 billion of military equipment, which makes no sense, back in, where was it? Was it Iraq? No. Who was it last year?
Afghanistan?
2 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
And remember, I had the guy who was in charge of the airport there on
right.
my show. Okay.
Yeah.
And so they left billions of dollars. They're saying that's because it's a war machine and that because, you know, I make tanks. You're in the government. I tell you what, we got to keep the economy going. So if we have a war, it helps our economy. Is that valid at all?
Well,
you've heard that for
years.
I know. Right?
That's the military industrial complex conspiracy theory.
So you just think it's a theory?
Well, I'm saying it's a conspiracy theory. There are certainly, Eisenhower himself said, beware of the military industrial complex. That's he said as president. And he was the former commanding general, 5-star general in World War II.
He came into Dachau. And he said this, I've told you this before, but I want everybody to hear it in their lifetime. He came in. This is how smart Eisenhower
was. That's the concentration
camp. And Eisenhower was the kind of guy, really wasn't presidential material. But very bright, a kind of the calm, true, humble guy.
Tell everybody what Dachau is, because a lot of people don't know that.
What it is.
Dachau is a concentration camp where Jews were killed. Many
horrible,
many
atrocities perpetrated upon
them. Yeah, one of the worst of the
They show up
camps.
With all these people that are, all these dead bodies and all these people that are gaunt from not being fed. Just a horrible, a hell on earth. And he said to the press, please take photos of all this. You guys that have film cameras, please, we didn't have video then, film it because this is, now somebody may not like me for this, but this is a quote of what is his name, the General Eisenhower.
Eisenhower.
Because some son of a bitch is going to come along in the future and say this didn't happen. And, you know, that's happened in the past 10 years, people trying to suggest that there never was a Holocaust.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
But Biden gave $6 billion to Iran days before the massacre on October
7th. I don't want to talk about that. I'm going back to the concept paper of the Israeli intelligence service that was published on October 15th. What that concept paper specifically said, it described options for dealing with Gaza after the war, or how do we deal with this? And the option number, the C, there's A, B, and C. Option C was exactly that they should move the Palestinian people out into the Sinai Desert and put them in tents. That's the proposal.
But that would include some of Hamas, wouldn't it? I mean, they would sneak out with them, right? Or no?
Yeah, who cares? They're out in the Sinai. They become, from Egypt's point of view, you ask why Egypt doesn't want this. One of the concerns is that Hamas would reestablish itself in the Sinai desert and cause trouble both to Israel and to Egypt. And then Israel and Egypt might get in a war fighting over the Sinai.
Let me ask you this. What do you think of my analogy, which may be flip, and I don't mean it to be flip.
Yeah.
But if I have gangrene, I've been saying this for months now.
Yeah.
Or 2 months, whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
If I have gangrene in my foot and the doctor says it's gotten bad, Rhett, and if we don't cut off your foot, the poison will go into your body. I know somebody, by the way, that was offered that a few years ago to remove his legs.
And died. Yeah,
he told would not me take that. It, yeah. And then he died. Yeah. So say, okay, well, I just choose to die. Or you cut off the leg. Hamas is like that gangrene leg, and it's like, you know, I mean, they are ISIS, aren't
well,
they, essentially?
You asked me before, you know, my plan is that there are other ways to do this than what Israel is doing, which is Benjamin Netanyahu's proposal is there's a little gangrene on the foot, so let's just kill the whole person. And that way we've solved the problem. There's no gangrene anymore because you're now dead, okay? Therefore, we solved the gangrene problem. He's not his view is his view is to remove all Palestinians because you don't know which ones are Hamas and which ones aren't. The reality is Hamas is an idea, Rhett. Hamas is not somebody in a uniform. Hamas is an idea.
You got mad at me for saying what you think. You do not have any knowledge to judge the heart of Netanyahu. You have judged his decisions, what he's doing. You do not know his motivations, neither do I. He might be very evil. You know, I was at the library last night,
yeah.
And I should have taken it out. He has a new autobiography that came out.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm going to go get it. I would really like it. I'll tell you what. I'll peruse it, because I would be lying if I said I will read it in its entirety. It's like 800 pages.
Okay.
But the little bit I read, it's giving me more insight. And I love to read, you know.
Well, we're going to talk more about Netanyahu. Let's not. I've got a lot more about Netanyahu to discuss today. And it will reveal some truths about him. You say you don't know about his heart. We don't need to know his heart. We need to know his actions. His actions speak louder than his words or his heart or what you might believe about him. Netanyahu.
Words are important, though, but they said the Bible says, out of the mouth the heart speaketh. And Hitler said what he was going to do before he did.
Well, exactly. And therefore, if you look at the words and if you look at the actions of this man, you will know. As I said, when the information on the intelligence came out about this plan C, option C, of moving all of the Gazans out into the Sinai desert and putting them in tents, Benjamin responded, "Oh, that's just a concept paper." That's what he said.
Well, you say this again.
That is just a concept paper.
What is the concept?
The concept of moving people out into the desert and putting them in tents. The Palestinians.
Okay. So he said that was a concept.
He said that was just a concept.
Okay. What does
he
that
said
mean?
It was
just
meaning
just a concept.
Meaning, oh, intelligence people are always coming up with different ideas. That's just a concept.
Yeah, we have not enacted or made a decision.
That's
to
what
do that
that's
yet.
What he was saying.
At this point, it's just a concept.
That's what he was saying. Yes, which is of course, from his mouth, if you took it absolutely, then yes, they haven't decided whether they're going to move these people.
Like this, but this table was a concept before they actually built this wooden
table.
But
as you see more and more of the Gazans being pushed to the south, moved to the south, Noah, please.
That's okay. No, he's my producer. He said,
I know, but I don't. It's distracting. The reality is, as people more and more Gazans are being pushed down to the southern border, it looks more and more likely that they're going to be pushed out into the Sinai desert.
Now,
that's
the,
what it looks like,
David,
and it looks
David,
like that's
David,
their strategy.
David, on the bigger picture, which I like to think about, the bigger picture here.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's go up to heaven for a second. We're looking down.
Yeah.
You know what this all proves?
Man is flawed. Yeah, I know. Understand, man is
extremely
flawed.
Extremely.
But
I mean, God so loved the world, He didn't send a committee.
Yeah.
And that's a joke. But
right.
It's not a joke.
Yeah.
Because look what we're doing. There's enough intelligence and money on this beach in Barrier Island in Vero Beach, Florida. We have more Fortune 500 CEOs retired than any zip code in the United States of America. They could say, 30,000, I don't know this, and this is flip for me even to repeat it, but 30,000 people died last night of starvation. You and I say that, and you know what? 2 minutes from now, we're going to drink our coffee, then we're going to get done with the show. And,
right.
You know, we're going to do this and do that and have a big lunch
well,
and whippity-doo-dah
well,
day. Why can't we feed the world? Where is the dignity for all of us?
Well, going back to Netanyahu's statement about this is just a concept.
Okay.
The foreign minister, the former foreign minister of Israel, literally within a few days of that intelligence report coming out, he also said that he suggested Gaza should be evacuated and relocate them all into the Sinai Desert. This is the foreign minister, the former foreign minister, Danny Avalon, who said that. That's an official, a high-level official. Other reports have come out recently that diplomats have been privately proposing allowing civilians to temporarily escape, use the word escape, the perils of Gaza for refugee camps in the Sinai Desert. Okay, so now, why would this be something that Netanyahu would like? I talked about this before. The idea would be if Gaza is cleaned of Palestinians, if they all flee into the Sinai Desert, there's no more Palestinians there, no more Hamas, no more nothing. The place has nothing but goats and sheep left. Then Israel will come in and claim that as part of Israel, and we'll send in settlers. Okay. You ask about settlers, why the settlers left the Gaza. Well, guess what? The settlers want to come back.
Sure.
They want to come back, and they want to settle. Now, Gaza happens to be a very rich agricultural area. It's considered to be the basket, the fruit basket of that whole area. It's very wealthy, valuable land from agricultural point of view.
Yeah.
And as we talked about on a previous show, it has a trillion cubic feet of gas offshore.
Yeah,
and that when they could gave be developed.
Them, when they pulled all the Israelis or the Jews out of the Gaza Strip in 2005, they actually there was talk, and Israel would be happy that they could become self-contained, and but we're going to prosper. And I saw that they made a video, and they were going to have all this. They were going to be as rich as the other rich nations over there, and they're going to, you know, they're going to dig for this gas. But no, it's all turned out to because Hamas got in there and spoiled the whole thing.
Yeah, well, it's a combination of Hamas and what I call the right-wing settler community of Israel trying to sabotage the success of Gaza. That's their goal. And
well, why not just leave the Jews there in the first place?
Because
let's say you and I were brothers and we had a rose. And the Bible said that the desert shall blossom like a rose. Do you know the person – I mean, do you know the country that deports – at least when they had the Gaza – was shipping out more roses than anybody daily. It was Israel. They were the number one rose. What am I trying to say here? The exporter.
You're saying that they turned the desert into a rose garden.
Okay. Well, it's in the Bible. It said the desert shall blossom like a rose. Anyway, listen to this.
Yeah.
So let's go out, shall I, to look at the bigger picture, and that's my Abba, Papa, Father over here. Now, I don't understand God's ways. I know that people have questioned it in the Old Testament or the Torah. He says, "Who are you, old man, to question me? Where were you when I formed the mountains and the earth?" And the thing is, you and I have been here for a second. When we die, we will have been here for less than a second in eternity. I mean, it's not even it's like a hair, a breath. But anyway, so God tells King Saul to go in and kill the Amalekites. Now this bothers me. I'd love to be able to talk to Jesus someday about this.
Right.
But he says, go in and kill the Amalekites, the women, the children, and all their animals.
Right.
Let me finish the quote. Lest they be a thorn in the side to Israel forever. Your thinking says that's wrong. My thinking says, gee, that's wrong. God says, I am God.
God did not say that. Samuel said that. And I say that Samuel...
we're going to separate now.
I'm saying that Samuel, as a prophet, was misled. He was not speaking on the behalf of God that I know. The God that I know would not be in favor of a genocide of any people.
And you're like Israel. Israel, a lot of the Israelites, you know what they did to the prophets? They killed God's prophets. Burn them at the stake and stuff.
Look at
Elijah. Now, hold on. Elijah came along and they said, hey, we're going to prove who's God. Everybody did this peacefully. They built two big, huge fire pits.
Yeah.
Okay. The other guys said, oh, we're going to pray to our God. I don't know if it was Egyptians, who it was. Come down and burn up this thing. Well, nothing came. And, of course, Elijah says, well, where's your God? Is he on the toilet? Then Elijah, biblical, okay, and you can say you can fluff this off, but it's not. It's historic. The people there were witnesses. So he said, pour water on the wood you have here for me. And then he asked God to set it on fire. And he said, boom. The lightning came down and set it on fire. So you can question God's prophets. Remember, I am a prophet.
You
I saw 9-1-1 before it happened.
Oh.
Now, you and I know each other. I've been invited to your house.
Yeah.
You know, you and I break bread. I saw, and I have a living witness.
Right.
48 hours. That Saturday night, I woke up in a sweat with my head like somebody had poured water on it.
Right.
I was terrified. I was running from soot in New York City. And there were three blasts in the dream, and they said, why are they doing this? They used to be our friends. And I saw a picture of a little dark-skinned man with a mustache. That same picture would show up on TV. 6 months later, it was a young Osama bin Laden. So, and he had been friends with us. We were giving them, remember, we were giving them military help when they were doing that thing against Russia or whatever. Okay, so now I know that I saw this, and I woke up in a sweat. And I was told, go back to sleep. It's just a dream. I said, it's not a dream. I'm in fear of the life of my present. Now, my brother drowned on 911, my only loving brother. Okay, so I was not able to save him. I was not able to report this and save one solitary life. Why did I see this? Except perhaps because of my relationship with my Father in heaven to somehow comfort me that there is a greater power, or this is some sort of a gift that, you know, different things are shown to me. You can ask people right in here. I mean, one time I was here getting a massage, and I saw a horse running with fully, when I see the horse galloping, and it's got the tooth thing on it, whatever that thing is around the mouth and everything, I said, someone's going to die, and it's already saddled up. It's going to happen soon. I left town. And then when I left town, I was up in Vermont. My father died. I came back. And the massage therapist, she had red hair, I forget her name, she said, isn't that amazing about your vision? What vision? The one of the horse. What about it? Remember you had the vision of the horse? Oh, yeah. A few days later, my father died. Now, these are all, you can take it, you can think I'm a nutcase, but I'm Rhett Palmer. I'm the shoeshine boy from upstate New York. I had an alcoholic mom till I was 15. I've lived in a great abundance of wealth, and I've also lived in the ghetto as a struggling songwriter.
Right.
All I can do is be honest with you. How could I see the future?
Yeah.
So are the prophets of God, and it was also prophesied that I would, and we have witnesses, by the way, we have six witnesses. In Schenectady, New York, we were in a prayer circle at Barry Fiden's house, whatever, the Jewish kid who came to believe in Jesus. He was not a kid, he was a man, and his family, and we were praying there, and another man put his hand on my shoulder and said, God's telling me, you're going to move to Florida eventually outside of Orlando and have a radio show.
Right.
I totally forgot about it. Now, this would happen years later. In the meantime, I was flown down to Florida to a concert. I go to Africa. I went to Haiti as a short-term missionary. I come back here. Somebody invites me over, these people from the New Missions. Check it out. George Detellis, his father, George Sr., was the founder. He's no longer on the earth. And George is now on the phone with him last week up in Orlando. Okay, and so I came down here, and all of a sudden I was asked to sing for the LA Dodgers. I was a guest on a radio show. They gave me a radio show 2 years into it. I've been on the radio now 29 years. Who gave me my job? Who? Now, I know. That's a fact, and I have six witnesses up there. Maybe I should go to Barry Feinstein and find those people. Hopefully some of them are still alive. There were six of us in the room when that man said I was going to move to Florida to have a radio show. Now, so are there modern-day prophecies? Because I even was out to lunch yesterday with a pastor and his doctor father.
Right.
And he said, you know, they kind of want to believe that after the apostles, all the prophetic stuff ended, God no longer heals, only God could possibly intervene in a miracle, that there are no modern-day apostles or disciples of Jesus, and Jesus himself said, these works you will do even greater than the ones that I do. But anyway, so all I can do, now you believe me, right? I mean, we're friends, but you can't believe me 100%. You know why? Because you weren't there. You weren't inside my soul, my being, when I woke up that night and had that terrifying dream of 911.
Yeah.
But how did that happen? So, yes, I do believe there are modern prophets. I also believe there's a bunch of phony balonies.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been taken advantage of in the Christian world by people, bastards behind the pulpit who misuse people and seduce women.
Right. Well, anyway, so that's a long-winded roundabout about the Amalekites and Samuel.
So God tells Saul to kill the Amalekites.
Yeah.
But you want to believe that was Samuel and not God.
Yeah.
But yet it was Samuel who went to, when Saul didn't kill those people, that God broke his relationship with Saul. Samuel went to
David.
No, don't interrupt. What was his father's name? What was David's father? That's what I was coming to. Anyway, he goes to David's house.
Yeah.
And he said, bring your sons. God has told me one of your boys are going to be the king. And the Samuel goes up to the first one and says, no, it's not him. Second one, third one, fourth one, fifth one. He said, do you not have another son? None of these boys are going to be king. Well, I have this other one. He's 14 or 15. He's out in the field, and he's got sheep manure all over him because he's a shepherd, which is the lowliest shepherd. Bring him to me. This kid, David, he will be the future king of Israel. Now,
yeah,
came to pass, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it did. But that may be because Samuel was a very influential political operative.
You don't want to believe God's hand in any
of
this.
No, what I'm saying is that there, you know, you could say that is this God's hand that Israel is pushing the Palestinians out of Gaza?
I have no idea.
I think this is, as you said last week or the week before, it's all about the Benjamins. And it's really two Benjamins. It's the money Benjamins, and it's Benjamin Netanyahu. That's the Benjamins that are
involved. He happens to be in office at this time.
He happens to be. Yeah. Now, anyway, let's I think we can take a break. I've already made my point that I'm concerned that Israel is pursuing a policy of ethnic cleansing, which is pushing the Gazans out of Gaza so they can take over, Israel can take over, and have that as its own wealthy enclave and incorporate it into Israel. That solves their security problem, and it makes them rich. So why not do it? Who cares about the Palestinians?
I'm very sad about
it. I'm very sad about it, too. And we're going to, in the next chapter, which is coming up after the break, we're going to talk about, one, the U.S. supplying weapons to Israel, and two, is the U.S. going to continue to back Israel when Israel conducts this kind of—
And by the way, God said that he was so disappointed with man, this is what I was told in the Bible, that he repented of having made man and was going to annihilate man in his entirety,
right?
But then came up with a salvation thing where you humble faith. I don't know. I wasn't there. I'm around. It sounds crazy. Look, I was into Eastern religions until I was 29.
Yeah.
I did not believe in Jesus. I thought it was a bunch of hooey.
Right.
So it took a miraculous, wildly miraculous intervention for Jesus to make known that he is the Son of Man, the Son of God, and that he is the Messiah and died for my sins on the cross.
Right.
It's still a crazy story. I mean, I'll stand before Jesus. What a wild story. I mean, and then I feel like I'm a bad guy for saying God likes drama. I don't know if God likes drama. That's not for me to know whether he likes that. But I do know he used drama because the most dramatic thing, I mean, sending him south. Let's say he was at once one with Jesus. How could I say, hey, David, I love you and my friend. Some nuts go by here right now. One of us are going to die. They say, we're going to kill someone in that studio, one. And I jump in front of you and I take the bullet. Boy, you're going to say, Red's dead. He really was my friend. I mean, you know, how about these guys, these Navy SEALs that have a brotherhood?
Yeah.
And jump on a grenade.
Well,
your
point about Christ dying for us, jumped in front.
There's no other way that God could say that I love you without saying I'll die for you.
Yeah, yeah. All right, that's a good place to break.
Yeah, so we want peace.
We'll come back.
But one thing we need to do, we all need to pray. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem, for I shall bless them that bless thee. Today's broadcast is brought to you by Dr. Malin, Dr. Schnell, Dr. Katz, all over at Center for Advanced Eye Care. Eye doctors that genuinely care about your eye care. These are good guys. It's where I sent my mom when she was alive. It's where I go. It's where my wife Barbara goes. You should go there too. Just trust me on that. Okay, Center for Advanced Eye Care. We'll be right back when I press this. Well, Noah has been with us, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. And he's behind the glass today training up Aaron. So we welcome Aaron. Aaron's in training for running the equipment. And Aaron's a sweetheart of a guy. Good to have you here, Aaron. And thank you, Noah, for teaching him. And we're talking with former U.S. diplomat David Hunter. And by the way, you can, if you only miss a little of the show or a lot of the show, you can go to Rhett Palmer's podcast. I listened to a little of us last night and listened to a little of another show I did yesterday.
Good, good.
U.S. continues supplying weapons to Israel. Do you want to just broach the subject? Israel engages in war crimes. That's what you say, right?
Right.
Starving Palestinian civilians for food, water, medicine, and dropping bombs on civilian schools, hospitals. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Blinken said he is concerned about the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. That's sort of obligatory that he says that. But vetoed a U.N.-supported humanitarian ceasefire last week and approved supplying U.S.-made ammunition for Israel's tanks and U.S.-made bombs for fighter jets flying over Gaza. What I want to know is, and b- But back in 1948, we wouldn't help Israel at all. Why the change? Why? And then they say now, well, that's because it's a post in the world of true democracy, and that's why we're helping Israel. Well, obviously, there's a lot more to it than that. I mean,
there certainly is, and you know, ironically, you know, you can say, Israel is an outpost of democracy in the otherwise dictator-run Middle East,
yeah.
And there is some validity to that. You've got Egypt, for example, General Sisi, who, by the way, is having elections coming up this week.
Where?
In Egypt, General Sisi. And,
is he the leader of Egypt now?
He's the leader of Egypt.
Like Anwar Sadat.
He overthrew Morsi in a military coup.
Is that good or bad?
Morsi was identified as being pro-Muslim Brotherhood and was—
So I should be happy that—
So right-wing people are somewhat happy. The United States—
How did this guy take out that?
He was the military of Egypt. He came out of the military of Egypt.
You got to really watch out.
He's a former general.
Because now let's say all of a sudden I got elected president of some country. I got to really scrutinize. No wonder that Stalin had all the generals and all the lieutenants after the war murdered.
And President Xi did the same thing. He's replaced all of his generals with people that
did
are
he
his
kill
friends.
Them or just fire them?
Replace them. We don't know. They oftentimes they just disappear. We don't know what happens to them. But that's President Xi of China. Xi has been systematically. That was one of the first things he did when he got into power.
But I will say this: in the corporate world, which I know very little of,
yeah.
But I know that the new CEO will come in. And they fire everybody because they have an allegiance to. Well, this is the way we did it. Well, I'm not going to argue with you. You're out. Fire them all.
Let me mention that we have one of the strengths of America, besides having a competent military, is we have a non-political military that is essentially aligned to the Constitution and not to any political leader that happens to be in office at that day. And that's very important distinction. That's one of the reasons why America is as stable as it is and as successful as a military.
There were people after Trump many believe, as I have believed, you know, that the election was stolen. Maybe it wasn't. But there were people that believed that and were hopeful that the military would intervene, you know.
I know. And Trump has even attacked people like the Joint Chiefs of Staff General Milley and others, claiming that they were politically biased because they didn't support Trump. They're not supposed to pledge allegiance to Donald Trump. They say, I pledge allegiance to the United States.
No, but they are supposed to
obey. They're supposed to obey. He is the commander in chief.
The president's pleasure, is that what they say?
No. That's
what General Colin Powell said when he was used
in these cases.
I serve at the president's pleasure.
Okay. Technically, the president has the ability to remove from office anybody in the U.S. government, technically speaking.
Really?
Yeah, technically speaking, he has the ability.
So is that why Governor DeSantis was able to go over to the other side of Florida and where he thought there was injustice being done by a district attorney or something and pulled them out of their job?
I don't know. The issue, you mentioned attorneys, and attorney general is a good example.
Yeah.
The president, in theory, has the ability to appoint the attorney general. You know, we know that with Trump, he had an attorney general, that several attorney generals.
Yeah.
Ashcroft was one of them. And he has the ability to remove the attorney general. But technically, he cannot remove the attorney general for doing the attorney general's job according to the law and according to justice. That would be interfering in our justice system. So there are limits on what a president can do, okay? And that became an issue and has—
Do you believe that, just on a domestic front,
yeah.
Do you believe they have, in fact, weaponized— I mean, this whole thing going on in New York City against Trump.
Well, that's a local New York City thing. That's not a federal case.
What's the crime that starts with an F? That kind of a crime against Trump, then he wouldn't be able to run for the presidency. I tell you what, if they try to pull Trump, if they try to forbid Trump from running for the presidency, watch out, because people are going to arm themselves, will be a civil war, I believe.
The F there is felony. I think that's the
felony,
term you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, felony.
So if he's I was with a felony yesterday.
You were with a felon.
Yeah, a former felon.
Okay.
He's repented and straightened out his life, but a felon can't vote anymore, right?
That's correct. A felon cannot
don't
vote.
Don't you think that should be restored? Like maybe if you're a felon after 5 years
of
being out?
It can be restored. It can be restored.
Oh, it can. By who? The president?
There's some provisions for restoring voting rights.
Right?
Restoring voting rights. But keep in mind, if Trump were convicted of a felony, that means he can't vote for himself, but he could still run for and be a president.
I was told he couldn't run.
No, that's not true. He could.
Are you absolutely certain?
I'm certain, yeah.
So he can run for this
race no
matter
what? As a felon, he could run for president.
So there's
nothing,
no way they can't.
There's nothing in the Constitution.
So in other words, no matter what happens now, because do you believe that judge is corrupt right now from the things he said and done? It's telltale
sign. Okay, that's
sign.
All
I
domestic stuff.
Is.
I don't want to get into that.
Yeah,
we're straying off
subject. We should
talk
domestic sometime,
though. We should, but I don't want to stray into that. We got enough to talk about here.
Yeah, I know. We got to save the world.
The reality we're talking about right now is, as you mentioned with Mr. Blinken, that's the Secretary of State, Blinken, ironically, is saying we have to have more humanitarian concern for the people of Palestine, the civilians of Palestine. Yeah. But at the same time he's saying that, Israel is bombing and starving the Palestinian people, and the U.S. is rewarding Israel by shipping more arms to Israel so it can do even a better job of bombing the so-called Gaza, but in reality the Palestinian people. That's what's going on. And the
well, you know what? I've learned in life, half measures avail little. You know, it's just I agree that they need to get rid of Hamas in its entirety. How that could be done, like I said, if you were the emperor, how would you – this flooding of the tunnels.
Not going to work.
That worries me.
No.
Because we could be drowning some of our people.
Yes, you could. There are also some concerns that could cause major contamination to the groundwater supply in the Gaza.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, if you have these tunnels and they leak, then the water would be contaminating. Keep in mind, you have groundwater as a source of supply. Actually, Gaza is fairly adequate in groundwater in certain areas. So you could drill a well and pump out water. But if that gets contaminated with seawater, then that will become undrinkable and unusable. So
plus, you could have buildings starting to implode down into the ground.
Maybe.
Like these holes we have in Florida here.
Yeah, sinkholes. Yeah, that's a possibility. I don't know on that how that would work. So anyway, Blinken, the contradiction is Blinken is saying, on the one hand, I am in favor of limiting civilian casualties. And at the same time, he is authorizing what I call...
So he's speaking out of both sides of his mouth.
Is that what
you're saying?
Well, it's worse than that, because he's doing this without congressional approval.
But he doesn't have authority,
listen,
does he?
He's doing this without congressional approval.
But it's not Blinken.
It's Blinken, yes.
Doesn't the buck stop at Biden?
Blinken has the authority under Secretary of State to authorize what's called an emergency authorization of weapons. An emergency authorization.
Okay, so this isn't coming from the president?
This is technically coming from the Secretary of State. And he's saying the justification, this is in our national security interest, to assist Israel, this is his exact words, to develop and maintain a strong and ready self-defense capability.
And General Colin Powell was the Secretary of State, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I interviewed him. And he was not only a noble man, a great man, a wise man, very intelligent, but he also was a strong, firm man.
Right.
Blinken seems to be, you know, not – he seems to be easygoing and could easily be told what to do.
Well, and there is, of course, a concern by some –
I wouldn't want Blinken to be my general if I
was fighting a war. And there is a concern by some – Blinken is Jewish, and there is a concern by some – he's Jewish. And there's a concern by some that he might be taking a pro-Jewish or a pro-Israel stance more than any normal.
You and I are close to age.
Yeah.
You've seen all the number one movie on Netflix right now this week.
I
started watching last night. Is this whole documentary series on World War II. So you and I saw what happened with the Holocaust, and we thought it was horrible, right?
Of course.
What do you think of these people coming forward now? And they're anti-Jewish.
Yeah, well, I want to go keep on the focus of the supplying of weapons.
Aren't you shocked though? Where'd all this hatred for Jews come from?
Well,
I thought everybody was doing. As a matter of fact, before Obama got in office, I wasn't seeing color anymore. I thought black and whites were all getting along, and
I
love people, and they love me, and you got lovers, you got haters.
The reality here, and this may tie into answering your question about why they hate us. You know, if you're Jewish and you're saying why they hate us, why they want to kill us, why they want to wipe me out.
Yeah.
Okay. The reality is, Israel is also saying, in many cases, under the current right-wing government, we want to wipe out all the Palestinians. They are a scourge on earth. We don't want Palestinians at all.
I haven't heard anybody say that. They said that they wanted to wipe out Hamas.
Well, the idea of—
There might be some, but I don't really think so, because you've got Palestinians and Egyptians living in Israel.
I've heard people in this community that I've talked to who are pro-Israel who said, kill them all. Get rid of them. Kill them all, like vermin. Wipe them out, like vermin or something. Vermin.
Well, now you live on the beach. You are a former U.S. diplomat.
Yes.
You hang with some pretty—
Right-wing people.
I bet you don't get them to listen to the show, do you?
Well,
you've ruined me. I used to have a big listenership on the on the beach.
Yeah, they're. Let me put
it. What are you doing with that liberal guy on Wednesdays?
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, that's not
because
liberal.
I'm willing to listen to everybody.
Bravo, and I appreciate that, Rhett. And that's one of the reasons why I enjoy.
Matter of fact, remember when Hannity had the other I don't know, I think it was a Jewish kid who was the left. Remember that was the first show, was Hannity and Combs.
Oh, okay.
Combs was my guy. I met Combs.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I showed up at a convention a few years later. Hey, Rhett. I said, Combs remembered me, a nobody. I mean, I have a little show.
Yeah.
Who am I that he should remember
me? Well, you have a big personality. That's
but Combs was a sweetheart.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sorry that he died so young.
Yeah.
I really liked him.
Right. Well, you know.
But I would— You know, just like I think we should listen to everybody. And I think that even though I believe some of the things that Hannity says, his manager lives in town here. I've had lunch with him twice at the Ocean Grill. I don't like Hannity because he interrupts. Now, maybe it's because I interrupt, so I don't like Hannity interrupts because I see me and him. But I think he's a big mouth. I think he's arrogant.
Right. Well, and, I have an old saying, when all else fails, listen to the facts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And going back to this weapons, you know, Israel— In the first 2 weeks of the war, most of the weapons it was using, what was dropping on Gaza, were 1,000 and 2,000-pound satellite-guided bombs. These are huge bombs. Satellite-guided. They use a GPS system, and satellites have GPS. Sorry, GPS.
Because the whole country is just rubble now.
Well, and the point was, a lot of military experts, including U.S. military experts, said, these are really big bombs. Why is Israel using such large-scale munitions?
Because they wanted to get the tunnels underneath, probably.
Why are in such a highly concentrated, populized area, in a populated area? And they said, the comparison, a military expert said, when we were attacking urban Mosul, we wouldn't even use 500-pound bombs because they were too large. They would cause too many civilian casualties. So Israel has been wantonly abusing.
Like your friends on the beach, you're saying, who said, annihilate them all. You believe, certainly, there are.
Yeah.
But you and I, who are good human beings, decent human, we try to be anyway.
Right.
Would think that, but you're right, there probably are Jews who are in positions of power, or non-Jews even, Egyptians, because you have Egyptians in the government over there.
Right.
But whoever they are, they're people that hate the Palestinians, I'm sure, just like there's people on this beach that says, wipe them all out.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that a big, wide freaking brush?
It is. It is. And that, of course, is genocide.
Now, you have a friend.
Yeah.
Hey, he's a former CEO. Yeah, he's got, you know, $79 million bucks, and, you know, he's okay. And he says something like that. Don't you put that in your little account in your head and go, this man's not a good man to say that.
Yeah.
That's a wide brush.
Right.
You know, almost like you may be smart about, look, you know that guy who wrote the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
Yeah.
I always thought he was probably a fairly smart guy. He acquired a lot of money in life. He's getting old. I guess he doesn't see it.
Yeah.
His wrinkles all around his mouth, his eyes. And he said the other night, he said what he's promoting gold. He says he bought a gold mine.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I worship the god of gold.
Yeah.
And I looked at him, just like I looked at Cuomo, when Cuomo said, God didn't do this, prayer didn't do it. We did it. And I said, your history, if I know my father's personality at all, and sure, within a couple of months, guess what? Cuomo was off. He was out of there.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you right now, for that man, that rich dad, poor dad, he better either repent. I hope he comes to know Jesus, because I guess it's my duty as a Christian to pray for him.
Right.
But for God, would you please save that man? But anyway, other than that, I like Nebuchadnezzar, that guy, what a— I mean, first of all, to be my age— And to worship gold? Can you eat any better? You're on TV all the time.
Yeah.
Can you sleep in a better bed? My grandfather, who used to have his place in New York City, used to always teach me, can you sleep in a better bed? What more do you want? There's never enough. Even Rockefeller said, they said, what's enough? He said, well, just a little bit more than what you have.
Yeah.
The original guy, right? I think it was him that said that.
Yeah. All right. Well,
it's terrible.
Anyway, there is the
worship the god of gold.
The misdirection of man, you know, including these guys on the beach, is massive. This idea that, you know, kill them all. But keep in mind what Israel is doing today, starving civilians. That is a form of genocide, Rhett. Starving civilians. When you don't supply them with food, what do you think happens when you haven't eaten for 5 days? You start getting
sick. Even the Nazis, when they went into Czechoslovakia and they had them prisoners, they threw bread down at them, chunks of bread, like they were animals.
Yeah, but at least they gave them bread. And the reality
they threw
here,
it and then they were all trampled on each other trying to get a piece of the bread.
And you can see that today in Gaza. They actually are delivering trucks of supplies, and there's so few supplies there that the mobs attack the trucks, and they're fighting each other over.
I also saw where Hamas drove up. I saw the video from an aerial view.
Okay.
Hamas pulls up, pushes the Palestinians down and away. I didn't see them shoot anybody, but then they drive off with all the goods to bring them back to the
You know, this is an ironic Hamas. This is an ironic point. Some of the prisoners that were released from Hamas.
He says Hamas is starving
Palestinians. Yeah, I know. Some of the ironic.
And they are, right?
Some of the irony of this is when you had the release of the Palestinians by the Hamas of the hostages that had been held, including some of the Jews that were released. And the Jews explained their conditions while they were being held. And they said, you know, the conditions inside the tunnels where I was being held were really harsh. I didn't get a lot to eat. Well, guess what? None of the Palestinians are getting a lot to eat. Why should these hostages be fed bread and butter and soup and sausage? And the Palestinians,
well, because of the, what is it?
It's because of the embargo that the Israelis are putting on the food supply. That's why.
But everything that happens, you want to blame.
I'm saying don't starve out Hamas. You can hunt Hamas down and shoot them, but don't starve them to death.
There are Palestinians who have reported that Hamas won't let them leave.
Okay, anyway, let's stick to the point of
they're
using.
They're even dressing some up
like
soldiers.
I'm saying that starvation is a form of genocide, and it is an inhuman criminal act, and it is not effective. It's not targeted, and we're not starving Hamas. They're starving the whole population of Gaza. That's inappropriate. It's a war crime, and Israel should stop it. And you ask, how can we change the situation? They could change it very quickly. There are border crossings into Israel, lots of border crossings. They could be bringing truckloads of supplies through those border crossings into Gaza quickly.
Okay, but you and I are very heated about this. You're very emotional, so am I.
Starving is a serious claim.
Look at me.
Yeah.
I'm an overweight guy. I love food. Food to me is love.
Yeah.
I like feeding people.
Right, okay.
So I'm all about feeding people. And so, but I also know we're sitting here getting emotional, and I don't know if we're making a bit of difference. But I shouldn't say that, because there could be just one person who has power with somebody in Israel who happens to see our little broadcast or listen to it or view it, and, you know.
And a lot of people, by the way, you know, keep in mind, you mentioned in Israel, Netanyahu has no popularity in Israel. He is down in, like, the single digits for his polls.
Well, how did he get reelected?
He is down, and he knows that when the war is over, that he's going to be out of office and probably in jail. So for him, the longer the war goes on, the longer he can stay in power. So he has no motivation to end this war. That's one of the reasons why he's being so stubborn about this. Now, let me mention the stubbornness, because the United States has been arguing, what about what happens at the end of the war? This is a very interesting point. We want to see a two-state solution. Biden has said, and the Secretary of State has said, we want a two-state solution here in the end of the war. When Gaza is finished, it remains within the Palestinians' control, but it will probably be run. Our suggestion, the U.S.'s, Biden's suggestion, is that Hamas is out and the Palestinian Authority is in as the ruler of this area. Now,
who's going to rebuild all those buildings? Where does that come from?
I know,
from?
That's a separate question. Let's stick to who's going to take control of the country first. So Gaza will remain as part of Palestine. You'll now have Palestinian Authority over the West Bank and over Gaza. That's the plan the U.S. has been proposing. Benjamin Netanyahu has said, that's not going to happen. He said in his response to Biden and this idea of a two-state solution, he said, we're not going to make the mistake. We're not going to make the mistake of the Oslo Accord a second time. Now, that was his term. Most people in our audience out there, and you probably too, don't know what he means by the Oslo Accord. Do you? Okay, that's what I figured. And I figured that Netanyahu assumes that most people don't know what he's talking about. But people that are inside, that are well-informed, would know what he means by, not going to make a mistake by the Oslo Accord. Let's review what Oslo Accords are.
Okay.
The Oslo Accords were signed back, the first one was signed in 1993. That was the first Oslo Accord.
Okay.
Declaration of Principles of Palestinian Self-Rule. That's what the term for it, the official name for it was, Palestinian Self-Rule. The second Oslo Accord was signed in 1995 by Yitzhak Rabin and Yasser Arafat. Okay, you know Yasser Arafat, and you know Rabin was the prime minister.
Yeah.
That was signed in September of 1995. That was called, the actual formal name of it was a Palestinian Interim Agreement on the West Bank and Gaza.
What was the peace agreement they all signed when Carter was president?
1995, that would have been Clinton. Carter was earlier. I'm not sure what that was.
Nobody sticks to these
But we're talking about the Oslo Accord. It was agreed to by the Israeli Prime Minister, Yitzhak Rabin, and by Yasser Arafat in September of 1995. In November of 1995, literally November 4th, so like almost a month later, 1 month later, Yitzhak Rabin was assassinated. The prime minister of Israel was assassinated. Who assassinated him? It turns out the guy was, his name is Yigal Amir. Yigal Amir was a far-right Zionist settler, Israeli settler, who assassinated him because Yitzhak Rabin had agreed to the Oslo Accord. He had agreed to the Oslo Accord. The settlers didn't want the Oslo Accord. They didn't want a two-state solution. They said, there's no two-state solution. We want all of Israel. So what effectively happened is that the settlers, the far-right settler Zionists, they assassinated the politically elected leader of Israel. Now, what happened?
Who took over then?
Benjamin Netanyahu.
Was that when he entered office?
That's when he entered office, right after Yitzhak Rabin was murdered.
So you're saying by association, this guy is a extreme Zionist.
Well, it's worse than that. It's worse than by association. There's actually films that were made. There's a movie that came out, and I'm ordering the movie. And
a documentary?
It's a documentary.
You know what's not fair in today's world?
Yeah.
I used to be able to buy a DVD, you watch, and you could share it with me.
Yeah.
You pay Apple. You know, buy a movie for $20.
Okay.
And you can't send it to
anybody.
Anyway,
the movie, it's called Incitement. And that's the name of the movie. It's a Jewish movie made by a Jewish producer. It was actually nominated to the Academy Awards from the State of Israel in 2020, the movie Incitement. And it's about this assassin, Yigal Amir. Now, in the footage, which is including live footage from, it's incorporating, it's like a docudrama. It includes Benjamin Netanyahu attending a rally, leading a rally, a right-wing rally, where the protesters are calling Rabin a traitor, a murderer, and a Nazi. And this was filmed before Rabin was assassinated. So in the period, literally, before Rabin was assassinated, Netanyahu's supporters were yelling that Rabin is a traitor and a Nazi. Well, and then one of them shot and killed Rabin.
That's what they felt.
And then Netanyahu got elected president. Prime minister. Now, the reality is Netanyahu has been against the Oslo principles and against the two-state solution since he got elected in 1996.
Well, you know, we just had a ceasefire, right, a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
Okay, what, 6 days?
6 days.
Who broke the ceasefire?
That is a debatable question. That is a debatable question. The issue here of who broke the ceasefire.
Everybody on the news and everywhere was saying initially it was Hamas.
Okay, I'll tell you what happened. I'll tell you what happened in that ceasefire. I've looked into it. And unfortunately, the reality was that Israel said they wanted women released. Now, that sounds like a nice humanitarian thing. Oh, we want to release women.
Yeah.
Well, the women that were being released, that were still being held, are members of the Israeli military. They're IDF soldiers. In fact, one of the units that was captured is, there's a kibbutz called Oz, O-Z, like Wizard of Oz. There's a kibbutz called Oz that is 1 kilometer from the border fence, what's called the Iron Wall, where the Hamas came through. And operating at Kibbutz Oz, or right next to Kibbutz Oz, was a command and management center for Israeli intelligence, which was monitoring the Gaza. And most of the people in that command center were women intelligence officers, women intelligence officers. And they were stormed and captured at the very beginning of the attack. And therefore, a lot of those women intelligence officers were hauled back across the fence into Gaza and are prisoners. Yeah. Now, those are the women that Benjamin Netanyahu is saying, oh, we need to show that we will release women. Those are not women. Those are soldiers. They're soldiers that were intelligence officers. And that's who's being held by Hamas. And now you're saying, you know, the you being Israel, if you want to use that term, you're saying, you give me 20 intelligence officers who happen to be women. In return, I'll give you some of the recently captured West Bankers that I have arrested without even a search warrant, just basically arrested and kidnapped.
Are you sure they're just West Bankers?
Yes, they are. Most of the people, that, and that's why Hamas is saying, if you want to exchange military, we insist on exchanging for named military Hamas fighters. We're not going to exchange for just kidnapped West Bankers that Israel is rounding up, as they're doing right now. Every day, Israel in Jenin, in the West Bank, they are in there doing raids, and they're grabbing people and pulling them out and sending them to their Israeli prisons. And they are doing so oftentimes under what's called administrative detention, which means they're not even being charged for a crime. They are not being given access.
That sounds like us after January 6th, when they wouldn't even allow our people to be represented by lawyers. By the way, count to five, would you?
1, 2, 3,
no.
4, 5.
Why is he not on?
That one there.
Okay, count to five now.
How about now? 1, 2,
nope.
3.
No, he's on.
He's on.
He's on. You're on.
Oh,
okay,
you're on.
You're on.
Are you on
okay.
blue? Is he
you're
on blue?
Okay.
This, I'm
he
goes pink. He's green.
One.
That should be blue.
Okay.
But you're, he's coming on over here. 4.
All right.
Okay, 4. Yes.
Okay.
Okay, you're on.
So anyway, I want to go back to this point about Netanyahu, just as a concluding point of our arms shipments to Israel. Mm. Benjamin Netanyahu is not going to cooperate with Biden on a two-state solution. Biden is Netanyahu, since 1996, has been pro a unified Zionist extremist version. He is not a moderate himself. He is now running a government which is including Iftach Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, who are also settler Zionists. So Benjamin is actually very happy with the group he's got as the government.
Well, who gave up? Who called the Jews to leave Gaza back in 2005?
That was part of the Oslo agreement.
Well, then it did go through.
Some of the Oslo agreement went through. At least it was in the process of going through. But as I say, And this has been released just recently by on Sunday. There was a big news article, several news articles about Benjamin Netanyahu having supported Hamas. Now, we've talked about that a little bit.
Supporting Hamas.
Hamas, supporting Hamas. Benjamin Netanyahu.
When?
For the last 10 years or longer. He has been providing.
Financially,
he has been providing money through Qatar.
Why would he do that?
Because he wanted, this is something I've explained to you, Benjamin does not want a single unified Palestinian state, then having two states, Palestine state and Israel. He doesn't want that. So by supporting Hamas, he is able to keep Palestine from having a unified government and forming a United States of Palestine with the Gaza and Hamas as a united entity. That's one of the reasons why he's also very anti-having,
which is what's happening in America too, because they're trying to say that you can't be arrested. You can steal up to $50 worth of stuff in San Francisco. You won't be arrested, and it's making the whole city's imploding. Did you know that?
Well,
with homeless.
Well,
what I'm trying to explain. Leaving,
you asked.
And they're, you know, before Obama was in office, black and whites were getting along fine. They put a wedge between black and whites.
Right.
They love it. Now they're bringing out this whole thing, you know, with the homosexuals and trans and all this stuff. It's
well, let me just say this as a concluding point. We're
divide
at the end
and
of our,
conquer, right?
We're at the end of the show. Yes, his idea was by having by his supporting Hamas, he thought he could keep Hamas controlled. He didn't expect Hamas to break out unless your theory is correct that he actually knew about the plan for the attack because it was intercepted.
The only thing that is deafening is why was there 11 hours before you get to those women and children?
And the Israeli intelligence services had the plan a year beforehand.
Well,
a year beforehand.
They say. And they agree. They admitted that.
They admit that.
But
yeah.
They poo-pooed it because they said it's impossible for them to pull it off.
So there is some – with those two factors, the huge delay in the response – and the fact that they had the plan in advance.
Well, I do want to let you know, first of all, it was the weekend. It was a holiday.
I know.
A huge holiday. And the attack took place on the anniversary of another attack that happened years ago.
Yeah, so they should have been on the alert.
Was it the 67 war?
Yeah, I'm not sure. They should have been on the alert.
No.
Yeah, but
no, there's a lot of stuff to catch up on.
But as I said, you know, this issue of the hostages, you know, and the women, you said that was the very beginning. You said, oh, the Hamas is the one that broke the last 6-day truce.
Yeah. That's what the news reported.
I know,
on,
but the news didn't know what I know, which is what I just described to you about the fact that the Israelis had women intelligence officers that were kidnapped by the failure of their own defense, by the way.
Yeah.
They should have been, you know, it's a military unit. They should have, intelligence unit, they should have been better prepared. They didn't, they were actually. None of the women in the intelligence unit had guns, believe it or not. You know, they were one kilometer from the fence, and they didn't have any guns.
I also believe that Israel took away the guns from the population, too. Mm-hmm. They need to repopulate the guns.
Well,
just like here, we've got people going into no-gun zones, killing children in schools and stuff. I tell you what, we need to train up the teachers. I'm sorry, it sounds like the Wild West, but we got it. You know, the one thing, like I saw that girl on TV, this lady, excuse me, not a girl, and this guy entered her bedroom.
Yeah.
Get the hell out of here. He wouldn't go, boom, shoots him. Dead.
Okay.
Good. Let's kill the criminals. Hey, you know what? They'd do a lot less robbery if they knew there were guns available to shoot them.
All right. Can I – if I – how much time left have I got to – there's another – one more topic.
Yeah, we have
– one more topic I can cover.
Minutes, yeah.
Okay, good. I'd like to shift gears. We've covered that.
We will introduce our guest, and you are?
Pastor John from Patriot Church.
Yeah.
Who also has a show here every Wednesday from 11 to 12.
Yeah, good.
And
great guest coming up, J6 Prisoner. Going to be on.
Down here?
No, he's going to be on Zoom.
Yeah. Zoom.
Okay.
A J6 Prisoner.
Okay, J6 is presumably, that means the people that were up on the Capitol Hill doing what some people call a riot or an invasion of the Capitol. But some people would say people would say that was just a tour. They were issued tourist passes and walking around peacefully. So I'm not going to get into
that. Videos show that.
Well, I've seen videos that showed the police getting.
How come the lie was in? By the way, the lie was on the front cover.
And
the front cover of the New York Times a week ago.
Yeah.
Saying multiple people were killed. No, one lady was killed on that exact day.
Okay.
By an officer. Why do they continue to lie?
All right.
Because most people won't listen to me.
Okay.
They'll never hear me say it. And they fabricate, which really pulls the rug out from all of them.
Well, I'll let the Reverend have the story of that as his
next week.
Today his program.
Yeah.
For those that want to listen to that,
yes,
I don't want to. No, I don't want to get involved in that. We've got too many other important foreign policies.
Maybe you should expose yourself to it.
Well, I watched for months and months the actual footage of what was going on January
6th. Have you watched the footage?
And there's new footage through the policestatefilm.net from Dinesh D'Souza as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, D'Souza is known to have a particular political view.
But and, film is film.
Yeah, I know. And film is film. And there certainly is some film that showed the police being hit with sticks and flags and people throwing mustard gas or other kind of stuff. I don't know what it was, bear spray or something, at the police. So there was certainly huge disrespect for law and order. Let me just put it that way. That's all I'm going to say. You can defend if you want to. The courts, and they are having trials and convictions. And some of these people, you can say that they are being held without charge. But in reality, a lot of them are being charged and convicted There are over 500 that have been convicted so far as I know. That's about as all I can say on it. I want to move to another trial, though, in conviction, and that is of the Russian dissident Alexei Navalny. Now, you can actually use this as the intro for Alexei Navalny. He's a very important figure in Russia.
Russian dissident Alexei Navalny, missing from prison. Okay, yeah, he's the guy who was running against Putin, right?
Right,
Mr.
right.
Navalny, who was principal opposition candidate against President Putin, was arrested for corruption. Was he a billionaire?
No, he was not.
And sent to prison in 2021. He was recently convicted of additional charges and had his prison sentence extended 19 years.
Yeah.
Now his Moscow supporters say he's no longer reachable in Russian prison. Yeah.
So
he's missing in action. He is, why? Why do they want to muzzle that guy?
Well, you know, interestingly, the decision to extend his prison sentence, he was sentenced to 11 years for corruption. Now, he was running an anti-corruption bureau, and his anti-corruption bureau was gathering information about Putin's corruption, the palace that he had in Sochi and all these, friends of Putin that were engaged in criminal.
So
that's why Navalny, first of all, he was poisoned and they thought they would kill him. And then he was sent to Germany and he recovered from the poisoning. And then he came back to Russia saying, I'm not going to stay out of Russia. I'm going to, represent my country and free them from this.
Did he do any good by coming back except get himself arrested?
He got himself arrested and thrown in prison, okay? And
but it's very easy to poison somebody's food in prison.
Well, it is. He wasn't poisoned.
You think maybe that happened?
No. He was poisoned.
They're thinking he might be dead.
He was poisoned on a plane. That's when he first got poisoned. He was poisoned on a plane when he was
coming back.
He was flying around in Russia from place to place campaigning, doing some campaigning. Anyway, so he is seen as a viable opposition candidate to President Putin. Now, interestingly, Navalny disappeared just a couple of days after President Putin announced this week he's going to run again for president.
But he allows no competition.
The elections are coming
it's
up in March.
It's a dictatorship, right?
But Putin wants to cover himself. So why allow, even from inside a prison, a potential political opponent to operate? Because Navalny was able to do Facebook interviews with people. He had lawyers coming in and out that could bring messages to him and so forth. So he was still alive and operating in a way to communicate. So he could have represented some sort of political opposition to Putin in his campaign and his election for March.
What I don't understand is Putin walked by a Russian soldier recently and his hat had fallen off. So no one's going to move because the president walked by. Putin goes around, turns around, goes down, picks up the hat and puts it back on, gives him a thumbs up and walks on.
Right.
I mean, that's something I might do. That's something that George Bush might do and probably President Trump also. But why would, if Putin's such a bad guy, why would that even enter his mind, that thoughtfulness?
Would you ride horseback on a...
No, I remember that picture. I don't know why he did that. Why would you allow your picture to be taken,
It was to show he was a He-Man. He's a big, tough guy. Even though he's only 5'7", he's a big, tough 5'7" guy. Mm-hmm.
He's how tall?
5'7".
So that's pretty short for a guy?
Yeah, he's my size. He's my size. Yeah, I'm 5'7". Yeah.
Bob Dylan's about that
Yeah,
size.
So.
Hey, Siri, how tall is Bob Dylan? I just want to know. He's my hero. Sue Bob Dylan.
Sue Bob Dylan. Okay.
It actually says Sue Bob Dylan.
Okay.
Poor
Siri.
Okay.
Hey, Siri, how old is Bob Dylan? Came up again, the same thing.
All right. Anyway, forget it. Let's go.
What
go on.
The
reality here is, Navalny was transferred about 2022 to an extreme prison called the IK6 prison, which is also known as the Black Dolphin prison. Black Dolphin, like the fish, the dolphin, or porpoise, This is known. This prison is known for extreme detention, torture, and very harsh conditions. And Navalny, only a few weeks ago, he was collapsing while he was in an interview with his lawyers.
5'6" and a half.
Yeah, pretty good. Anyway, he was collapsing.
So Bob Dylan's shorter than you.
Yeah, okay. But he can sing better.
A little bit.
And he's got a lot better
poetry. He does hit the notes. People don't realize. Yeah, he does he's hit got the it. Notes.
He's, I admire Dylan for his poetry, frankly. He's in my view, one of the America's best poets.
Yeah. He said, they said today, what would you do if you didn't? He didn't think he'd make it with his music in this day and age. He said, I probably would have been a professor. So he's my professor.
Yeah.
Because I've been listening to him since I was 14.
Yeah.
When I was alone living in a rooming house due to alcoholism in my family. I was totally without any adult supervision. Who is my friend? Bob Dylan. Listen to him all the time.
Good.
It's
all right.
A new morning.
Yeah, that's great. Anyway, so Navalny, it is concerning because he is likely to be either dead or having been removed even from that harsh prison to an even more isolated location. Everybody should be concerned. The White House has actually said that. John Kirby, he's the spokesperson for the White House. He said, Navalny never should have been jailed in the first place, and we're going to work with our embassy in Moscow to find out what we can find out. Okay, well, you know, that's a pretty weak response. We could take a much harsher response. That's what I want the audience out there to know, that this is a wrong thing that Putin is doing. Mm-hmm. Putin is an evil guy. He is a monster. He is an evil monster. His attack on Ukraine is monstrous. And I say that because the president of Ukraine, Mr. Zelensky, yesterday was in Congress meeting with Congress. He actually met with Speaker Johnson.
Yeah.
And he also went up to the White House and he met with Joe
but
Biden.
Would have given them $110
billion?
Billion?
I'm not sure how much we've given them.
That's what it said last night on TV.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Now, do you think we should be supporting, what's his name?
Zelensky in Ukraine.
And he lived in Ukraine. He was a diplomat to Ukraine. Lived there for how long?
I was there for 2.5 years.
And I would say after 2.5 years, you get a pulse of the people.
So you have quite the perspective on that.
Yeah.
I think these bills that come, I'm all for the single bills, back to the single bills again. Put one bill up, vote on that bill. Everything's connected. So everybody's trying to compromise this, compromise that.
That's a good point.
Pork fat, right?
They call it single.
To be honest.
They call it, they have a term,
single. To be honest, I will give some sympathy to the Republicans, including Johnson, in their attempt to bundle
to
this, because what they're bundling it with, what's making this a problem, is they're bundling it with immigration.
Mexico,
border, immigration,
border funding.
And they're saying,
you take care of the border, then we'll take care of him.
He's saying Israel.
Which is what a good woman would do. It said, we're going to take care of home first.
Well, or we're going to take care of it also. In other words, not first, but also.
Do you like Nikki?
Yeah, I like Nikki a lot. I watched Nikki.
She's very smart.
She's very smart.
Do you think she's corrupt with the money she made getting out? I mean, they all make money. Look, if the former vice president was with Clinton, he came in with a couple million dollars. When he left, he had over $100 million.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, but also, I remember this about Reagan, I'm sorry, I like Reagan over everybody.
Yeah.
Reagan, after he got retired, he went to either Japan or China, and they paid him $2 million for a speech.
Right.
Well, that's a big difference, Japan or China. Which one was it?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, the
I don't even like politics. I hate politics.
Yeah.
I'm sick. You ever hear my song? I'm so sick of politics.
That's good. Well, let me just mention one thing here. The immigration issue is important. And therefore, I do show some sympathy.
They're showing you that we have to shut off.
Immigration
is
important.
Is that the final right here?
Yeah.
10 seconds?
It's important.
We're going to be shut down.
But I agree with
Thank you for coming in.
I agree. Separate of the
Go to the Rhett Palmer podcast to hear this played in its entirety.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks.
God bless and good night.
All right. Sounds good. I'm glad we got that in because that was a good...
Oh, yeah.